Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. His only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a CGI robot, and I love films. As Veronica Roth once said, knowledge is power, power to do evil, or power to do good. Power itself is not evil, so knowledge itself is not evil. Also, the film Free Guy is a really lovely and funny movie, and I enjoyed it so much. Yeah, Veronica Roth, I liked it too. It's really, really great. Good call. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, James Acaster, and even Eggy Scrambles. But this week is the incredible director, writer, producer, Nia DaCosta. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get about 20 minutes extra chat with Nia. We talk in depth about beginnings and endings. You get an amazing secret from her. You get the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. TV homework, Ted Lasso season 2 is halfway through, so get caught up on all the episodes on Apple TV Plus. And also check out Soulmates on Amazon Prime. One will make you happy, the other will make you thinky. So, Nia DaCosta. Nia DaCosta is a fantastic writer, producer, director. She is currently working on the new Marvel film, The Marvels. She also co-wrote and directed the new Candyman film that is out this week. And this week, she broke a record by being the first black female director to debut a film at number one at the US box office, which is fucking great. It's also a really fucking good film, so that is excellent all round. We recorded this a week ago, just before the film came out. She was and is amazing, and I really appreciated her time. I think you will love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 162 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a writer, a producer, a director, a Little Woodser, a Ghost Tape co-creator, a Marvelzesser, and a Candyman bringing back the Candyman where he belongs. Please welcome to the show the incredible, the amazing, the brilliant, it's Nia DaCosta!
Oh, what a welcome. Hello. I'm so, so excited to be here.
Nia, I'm very delighted that you've agreed to do this. We've met a couple of times, you are in London for two things. Mm. Are you allowed to talk about any of them?
I can talk about the one thing I know I'm in here for, but I don't know what the second one is. But yes, I'm in London to shoot The Marvels.
Which is the movie spin-off of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I'm really, really excited about. I know a lot of people are fans of that show, and I think you were the perfect choice for director.
Because I love comedians so much,
Yeah. Can you tell, you described what going to a comedy club was like and why you didn't like it?
Yeah, I guess for me the first step is like, and there are comedians that I love and I will go to see stand-up, but like the first step for me is like, my worst nightmare is like going into like, a sticky floor establishment and hoping people are funny at me. Like, it really stresses me out. And then I went on like a very awkward double date with a guy who said, I love comedy, which should have been my first warning sign, to be honest. But
big problem.
He was a great guy, except so we went to this comedy show at the Comedy Cellar, which I'd never been to before and have not been to since. And the MC was just like typical, like vaguely misogynist, like, "Hey, look, you fucking that girl that you're with, bruh." You know, and he's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Ah." You know, it was just very.
Yeah, good stuff. It's all good stuff for the sounds of it. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't like it. Yeah. So that's the energy. And then, you know, just a lot of sad women comics who have to like say that they're women as soon as they hit the stage. And I felt so bad for them. Just wasn't my place. Wasn't my, you know, wasn't for me.
Just sounds like you maybe saw one bad night at a comedy club. But I do like the description of fearing people trying to be funny at you.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah.
I only want to do that if it's like Chris Rock. I've seen Chris Rock do stand up. I mean, he's like the best. Like he's the best.
Yeah. And he's very good. Yeah.
That's amazing. You know that I can I can only deal with the best if we're gonna.
Okay, that's fair.
You know, that's
right. You want number one or nothing. That's fair.
Exactly.
You're in town making The Marvels, which I'm assuming you can't tell us anything about.
No, nothing that hasn't already been said.
Are you at least enjoying it?
I am actually. It's like really, really fun. I love the crew, like love my crew. I just went horseback riding with Mikey Grip. like that's how much I love my crew. My cast is amazing. I feel really lucky.
I think you can say what you said to me because it's a positive thing. You're part of, you've come from making independent films and smaller films, and then you're making this, which is obviously a fucking massive film, and you're now part of the Marvel machine, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And your experience so far has been what? Not, I mean, I'm sort of setting you up to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember all the things I said, which is how I often feel after I talk to you. I'm like, what did I admit to? It's just been a really gratifying experience because it's probably the best experience I've had with a studio entity or just any kind of big brother entity. And for it to be with Marvel, which kind of, I think, is kind of scapegoated in the industry. Everyone's like, oh, you know, they control everything and da-da-da-da. And it's like, well, they're actually really open and receptive and like hire you because they want you to be you. So it's been really fun in that way to have the resources that I have and to work with like my my exec, Mary Lovanos, and Kevin, who I've, you know, loved since I was fucking nerd waiting in line to watch the first Marvel movies when I was like 18, you know, like that's been really, really cool.
I love it. I love hearing that. I love that they haven't been interfering and or shit.
Yeah, not for me, so.
Not for you. Also, you are here. Well, I suppose this isn't why you're here, but you are here at the time that your newest film, Candyman, comes out. I went to a screening of Candyman, and it was excellent. It is really, really good, and I loved it. It's really classy. It's a really classy horror film. It's very beautifully made, and I was quite impressed. I wonder, because you said you'd had quite a short shoot time. It was like, what, 35 days?
32.
And it's, you know, a lot happens in it. And I wondered whether there were a lot of quite long takes in it, long shots. And I wondered whether that is just your style or whether some of that was necessity. But either way, it fucking works. I'm just curious whether that was always how you wanted to do it.
That's definitely a style thing for me. Like, I really like long takes. I really... like everything, I'd always tell my editors, cut as little as possible. I talked to my DP and like, let's develop, let's move, let's have like really interesting blocking so that we can just keep things moving or hold a really nice wide or a nice master. Because I like the films that I loved growing up or the films that like really made an impact on me had that kind of style in it. And I love that you could tell a really interesting emotional story without really like forcing the audience's hand, but you could still be really smart about what you put in the frame. So like there's a couple movies that I can think of right now that like, that maybe I'll mention later.
Okay.
That like really made me feel braver about my instincts because, like, you know, you watch a lot of movies now and it's all like intense close-ups and cutting. And I love movies like that too. It's great. But I always felt a little insecure. I'm like, am I supposed to be like intensely, like doing all that stuff? And my instinct is always just to like, well, not always, but usually just let the actors like have the space and try to frame in a way that like gets information across, but isn't forcing you to feel or look a certain way, more like guiding you to it.
It's really classy. I really liked it, and it's beautiful. And it made me think. I once heard a podcast with Paul Feig, and he was talking about Bridesmaids, and he said how to shoot comedy, and he was like, the thing about shooting comedy is you have to get out of the way as a director. And he said, it's all about how you frame it. You have to set the stage correctly for your comic performers to have the space to do their thing. You don't want to be cutting. You don't want to be going in. You don't want to be giving close-ups and editing their comedy. You want to sort of almost create a stage for them in the frame. And as long as it's artfully composed, then they can do their thing. The only reason I bring that up is because that's sort of what you're talking about with Candyman. And Candyman is a horror. And I wonder if horror and comedy are always...
Oh, interesting.
I think the same, just different. The same, but different. And I wonder if any of that makes sense to you.
No, it does completely, because I think with comedy and horror, like, you are looking for a very specific reaction. And that is laughter on one end and fear, screams, gasps, you know, whatever on the other. And so that is, there are definitely genres where they, like, especially in horror, you have to, like, there's a feeling that you have to, like jump scares. You have to, like, force the audience to be scared. But again, I think I try to just create, like, a creepy atmosphere. And I think holding on things longer also forces people to, like, get kind of paranoid and, like, look at the frame. It's like, why are we holding? Why are we holding? Why are we sitting here? Why are we sitting, you know? And so, again, I guess instead of it being, like, jump scared, like, people hopping out and that kind of thing, I wanted to, like, I guess, yeah, Paul Feig is saying,
Holy F.
PF, as I call him.
Yeah.
Owner of PF Chang's. just, like, let the actors kind of tell you where the camera should be. Sometimes you're just like, no, please don't stand in the dark. But I think, there's something really, like, useful in that, composing the frame, letting it happen.
And when you do that, have you storyboarded that shot, or do you work that out when you're on set with the actors in the room?
It depends. Like, we have a big opening sort of scene where they're all at dinner and you hear the story of Helen Lyle at the beginning. And that, like, wasn't boarded at all, just because it was like, okay, this has to feel a certain way. We want to move through the room and then eventually get them into this place where they're sitting for the story. And so that, like, was just, like, rehearsals and with my DP walking it and blocking it. But then there were certain things, like a lot of the murder scenes where it was, like, shot listed. And then we did previs in order to make sure that we, again, I think this is, like, when you want to push a bit more, it's like, okay, we need this to connect to this. We want to have this transition here so that it feels like this. Like, that's when you want to, like, for me at least, start the storyboarding and getting kind of anal retentive about it.
Incredible. Last question on all of this, unless you're not bored of talking about it, is...
Never.
Oh, good. Well, so you could, like, something like the marvelous Mrs. Maisel spin-off that you're making here.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, it's a huge project, right? It's going to be at least a year and a half of your time?
Two
years of your time.
Yeah.
In terms of your brain, you have to come to London. You're from New York. You have to come over here to live here to make this thing, often with a group of strangers you don't know. How do you mentally prepare for that? Or is it just like, I'll take it one day at a time, see what happens when I get there? Or was it like coming here was like, holy shit, this is a big fucking deal? Like, how do you manage the brain part of it? Do you know what I mean?
I kind of learned on the fly because it wasn't just that, like, I was doing this huge movie. It was also that, like, finishing Candyman was really tough. And, like, we were in the middle of the pandemic and it was really stressful and it really just, like, took it all out of me. And then I had 2 weeks off and then I started this. So I was like thinking holistically, like, how do I survive being a filmmaker that loves to work? How do I survive that? And it was really take it a day at a time, as much as I can remember to, because I'm also someone who likes to think ahead and make sure that I know everything that's going on and, you know, just, I guess, director brain a bit. But I think the other big thing I'm realizing is, one, I need to take a long break after this movie. But so I'm looking forward to that. But
yeah, in 2 years, you can have a break. Sure.
Exactly. In 2 years, I'll totally go to sleep finally. But the other thing was, like, trying to figure out, like, what would set me up to be in the best environment while I did this really hard thing. And that goes to the people involved. And so, like, I'm really happy that I took the movie, because I felt like I was right about the people who were asking me to work on it. So, like, my exec Mary, like, she was a huge part of why I said yes, because, like, I always wanted to do a Marvel movie, but I didn't want to be tortured while doing a Marvel movie, you know? And so if I thought they were bad people or assholes or anything like that, I would have said no, regardless of, like, how much I liked the story they wanted to tell. And because they seemed like good people, I said yes. And because they are good people, like, the other people who've been brought into the process are also good. And I've been really particular about that. And I've been that way since the beginning of my career, but now I kind of am better at it, better at spotting and knowing myself. And I think that's probably the big thing, because we spend so much time with the people we work with, like more than most jobs, you are with these people. And it's so much passion and energy, and it's early mornings and late nights, and you just want to be with good people. And I think that's the thing that helps you survive the process, along with really enjoying, you know, what one does.
I love that.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
Okay. And this might be this might be annoying, because I wonder if I'd be annoyed if I got asked this question. Mm-hmm. This is not to the detriment of others. Being a director is a shit ton of different skills and different, you know, it's a load of jobs. Some part of the job is working with actors. Some part of the job is planning. Some part of it is visualizing. You know what I mean? Like, there's 100 million things that go into being a director. Do you have a part of being a director that so far you go, that's the bit I'm best at? And do you have a bit that I go, this is the bit I need more work on? And can you answer that question?
My end of term review.
Yeah.
I love rehearsal, because I love writing, and I think rehearsal, and also I like rehearsal before we get on the set, and then I love the block, because it's like such direct, it's like pure creativity in a sense, because a lot of making a movie as a director is also just like logistical, like not every decision is creative, but the like in those moments, especially with rehearsals, I love working with actors, like seeing how to make something better, like seeing if what's on the page works, because like the writing part of it is really fun, but the rehearsal part is like writing with people. You know, less lonely than just writing by yourself. So I love doing that. And then, you know what I always want to get better at? I always wish I could just immediately know exactly how to fix whatever, or like ask for what I want from each actor between each take, which is a near impossible thing. But I really want to get better and better at that, because I think it's helpful for them when you can be direct and sure and confident. I have no poker face, which is what everyone I've worked with has told me. So, which I think is helpful, because they know I'm never bullshitting them.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think I could be a little more.
As in sometimes you're like, I'm not quite sure what's not right about this, but could we try this?
Yeah, which I actually think is a really good thing to do, because I think the worst thing is to be like, like trying to pretend, or just to be like, I always say I don't know, because I think it's so much worse to bullshit them, like it's just because they also, like, actors are incredibly intuitive people, like that's so, like, they'll be like, you're stupid, and you completely lose credibility. So I just wish I always knew what to say, which is an impossible wish, you know, but that is something I do think about sometimes.
Oh shit,
you okay?
I forgot to tell you something.
oh no,
Need to cost it. You're so busy as well. This is really inconvenient for you.
Yeah.
You've died?
No.
Yeah. Oh. You're dead.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate, particularly now. A lot of people were looking forward to that film.
I'm really enjoying myself.
Never mind. How did you die?
I died surrounded by loved ones, peacefully. In bed.
Yeah,
that's how I died. Like Rose would, as Jack predicted. And it was right after I threw a very expensive diamond into the English Channel. So that's how I died.
How old were you? How old do you want to be when you die?
Like a smooth 96.
Okay, so you're 96. Couple of questions. Why are you throwing whose diamond was it? Why are you chucking it in the sea?
I think in my 60s, I took a break from filmmaking and I decided to be a cat burglar. And no one ever caught me, but there was this one police officer who was suspicious, always on my ass about it. And I said to him, you're never going to find that diamond. You're never going to find it. And so to fully protect my family, I threw it into the English Channel.
I tell you what, I'm buying that film. question two, why... You're surrounded by your loved ones, so they're all watching as you die, which seems mean to me, but okay. But you're dying peacefully, but what have you died of?
So we're all watching a movie. So it's like we're just watching a movie in the den.
Which movie?
We were watching The Princess Bride.
Lovely.
Because one of my grandchildren's partners hadn't seen it, and I was like, you can't be a part of this family if you haven't seen The Princess Bride. So
correct.
Here we go. This 100-year-old movie. It's classic. It was not even 3D. They'll be amazed.
What?
And I just fell asleep. And then my body was like, you're old. And this is what you said to Brett Goldstein on a podcast once. So this is what's happening.
You fell asleep and your organs just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just never convinced by the dying peacefully. I'm just always like, but what's going on there?
I think my brain just said, good night.
Enough's enough.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen this movie too many times.
Yeah. You've reached peak Princess Bride. We're ready to go now. Do you worry about death?
No, not really, actually. I worry about, like, accidents, sort of, but, like, not about the idea of death. Every so often, I'm like, whoa, I'm going to be dead at some point. That's really crazy. But I never, like, I don't, like, fear it on a daily basis. Yeah, no, not really.
What do you think happens when you die?
Well, I used to be very much like, we're dead, and then we're just gone, and then goodbye. Like, everything shuts down, shuts off, you know, et cetera. But as I got older, I like the idea better of just, like, something being there that's quite pleasant. I sort of like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer sort of image of death, where Buffy dies, sacrifices herself for Sunnydale, or Sunnydale, whatever it's called. And then her friends bring her back to life because they're idiots. And she's so pissed. And she was like, guys, I was in heaven. And they're like, what's heaven like? And she's like, I don't know. I wasn't, like, in a body, but it was just, I was just happy. And I was just, like, floating around. And I wasn't a body. I wasn't anything. I was just content. And I like the idea of that being, like, a state you can be in after all this is over.
Yeah. It's like finally your 2-week break, but
forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got good news for you.
Okay.
There is a heaven. Buffy was right.
Oh, yes.
Buffy was always right.
Mm-hmm.
And this heaven is amazing. It's got all your favorite things in it. What's your favorite thing?
A cinema. Oh. Where I can drink Manhattans. It's Alamo Draft House.
You've come to the right place. It's the Alamo Draft House.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now, in the Alamo Draft House, they love you. They love your work. They're a huge fan. They want to know about your life. They want to know about everything. But they want to know about it through the medium of film, because it's the Alamo Draft House.
Of course.
The first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing near DaCosta?
The first one I remember seeing is also the answer to a number of these questions.
Okay.
In a really fun way. It was Jurassic Park.
Mm-mm-mm.
I also have this thing where I usually remember, like, where I was sitting in a theater when I watched a movie. And this is, like, my first instance of this memory, which is I'm sitting in, like, sort of like the middle front of the middle to the left, with my dad. And the last thing I remember of the film are, like, the brachiosauruses sneezing on the kids in the trees.
Yeah.
And that is my first memory. But I think the reason why I remember it is because I was so scared. I was screaming and crying that my dad had to take me out of the theater. So I never finished it as a child.
Ah, was it just you and your dad?
Yeah, as I remember it, yeah.
You got any siblings?
Yeah, my younger sister.
She weren't invited?
She was, I was not alive.
Right. That's a big NFI.
Yeah. And I was 3, so she would have been way too young.
Oh, you were 3.
Yeah, I was a bebé. So.
Do you remember when you were a bebé, do you remember what cinema this was?
It was somewhere in Queens or Brooklyn. I'm going to go with Queens.
Little fun fact for you.
Mm.
Don't know if it's possibly one of the first films I saw in a cinema was a reissue that my mum took me to at the BFI of Baby the Last Dinosaur, which is a film with Sean Young about a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
And I screamed and cried so much we had to go.
It's called Baby the Young Dinosaur?
Baby the Last Dinosaur. It's like they find the last dinosaur.
Excuse me, I'm writing this down. Baby. It's called Baby.
It's called Baby. Yeah, the dinosaur is a baby.
But baby big, colon. The last.
I've had a look at it. It's mad that I found it scary.
I think for me, the thing I find so funny about, like, having to be removed from the theater was that, like, I think what happened was I was scared. There's some stuff is happening. I got to the Tyrannosaurus Rex part and I was like, hell the fuck no. Like, this is crazy. When he tries to kill the very sexy Malcolm. and definitely kills that lawyer in a very vicious way. And I think the Tyrannosaurus Rex went away, and my dad was like, it's fine, you're fine, everything's fine. I was like, okay. And then this fucking Brachiosaurus came, and I was like, not another T-Rex. And I don't think I could. I didn't get the point of that scene, which is like they're
the nice
Vegisauruses. Ones. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is what they said in the film. Yeah. My poor, I think about that, and I feel bad for my dad, because I'm like, I'm 3 or 2 maybe, because I came out in 92. He just wanted to go see a fucking movie.
Yeah.
It's rated PG. And he was like, it's going to be fine.
It's a really good movie. He was probably really into it.
Movie. Yeah. And I just ruined his day.
Has your relationship recovered?
Well, we don't talk anymore, but for very different reasons.
I think that was the reason, and we can all agree on that.
It just festered for a very long time. And then he was like, you know what? I can't do this. And so I guess the answer is no.
Okay. What's the film that scared you the most, or is it Jurassic Park?
So, yeah. So since this also could be Jurassic Park, my other answer was, I don't want to be one of those people who's like, I have 17 answers to this, but I'll say I have low-key two. So the way I think about this too is because I love scary movies. I love being scared, but I watch a scary movie. I leave the theater and the movie I'm not scared of the movie anymore. Like it's not, really? It doesn't really stay with me. So the movies that I find scariest are the ones that actually stay with me, even if my experience watching it wasn't as scary. So like Ringu, the Japanese horror film, like I watched that when I lived in dorms in high school and definitely thought about that a lot afterwards. Like, cause it's so, and I love The Ring. I think The Ring's a great remake of it, but that's more scary when you're watching it. But afterwards you're like, okay, no one's coming out of a television like that and fast forwarding, like it's fine. But Ringu, like homegirl looks like she's actually coming out of the TV. Like it's really, so that was really scary after the fact. But then another time I had that was the Evil Dead remake, which was like very scary when I was watching it. And I like the imagery in that movie, like I like remember watching the movie and I was like, fuck, I'm going to think about this tonight. Like, I know I'm going to think about that face and that demon body. And I just, that was like really terrifying to me. But for the most part, I don't really like, they scare me for sure. Like I saw The Hills Have Eyes in high school. And I remember sitting in the theater before it started. And I was like, it was like being on a roller coaster. I was like, I shouldn't have gone on this ride. I shouldn't have done it. Why am I here? What am I doing? Like it was, which is what I love about horror films.
Yeah. I know some directors like show the crew certain films as like references or inspirations. Did you have a list of films for Candyman?
Yeah. It was like Rosemary's Baby, The Fly, Phantasm. What else did we do? There were a lot. Don't Look Now, which was really for me and my editor, which I'd never seen before. And we sat down and we watched it. You love this movie, don't you?
I think it's the greatest movie ever made.
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
That is really interesting.
I talk about it a lot. I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you'll know I bore people to death.
Maybe I missed this episode. Wait, that's really okay.
I've tried to stop myself talking about it because I talk about it so much.
Okay,
but I'll talk about it.
Okay, so basically,
please, because we haven't talked about it in ages.
Okay, good. So my editor and I sat down. We're like, okay, we're making a horror film. Let's watch. Get inspired. Don't Look Now, obviously, on every list of best movies, best horror movies, whatever. And I knew there was something about this ending that was going to be really... And I knew there was like a really interesting sex scene in the middle, which I really wanted to... something in perp, but I was really interested in seeing.
Yeah.
And so we watched it. And the thing that I loved about it was the editing. How interesting the editing is. How it just plays by its own rules, but it's completely... It makes sense. I mean, sort of. And then that the sex scene in the middle was really interesting, and I love how it plays with like grief and memory and like sensation. It was like very like sensual, like in terms of like sensory, I guess, as a film, which I thought was really interesting. So I was, you know, I was like, I'm not scared of this movie, but I'm intrigued by it. And then the ending, I was like, what on earth is going on? But that ending for me, I was like, I have to make everyone watch this now. So that's why it's on this.
Absolutely love that film. We'll talk about it another time forever. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, I wish I'd never brought it up. But you do love her.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, good. What's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier, Nia DaCosta?
So I wasn't a crier. I was always a crier in like movies, TV shows, commercials. in my life, never. I'd be like, what's there to cry about? I've since done some therapy, cry a lot more now. It's a wonderful thing. I think crying is very important. But in terms of the movie that made me cry the most, again, Jurassic Park. However, I think as an adult, I think it was Roma, genuinely. Fun.
Yeah, that's fair.
Roma, really, which I thought was, I think was my favorite movie of 2018. I just, that and like Shoplifters, which also made me cry so much. I think two of the best movies that have come out in the past like 25 years, like truly.
Shoplifters, number one.
Yeah. So my friends and I had this debate. We were Shoplifters in Roma, and I was like, listen, I don't, they both can win. You know, I was like, but.
Yeah, no, they both can have it.
No, but I understand the Shoplifters of it all. That is like a really special movie. Like, but Roma, like, there's just so much heart in that movie and so much love in that movie. And I love that Cuarón doesn't, like, shy away from how complex, like, the social dynamic is between this main character and basically his family. And that part where the kids are, like, in the water and then they hug her. The kids come out and they hug because they almost drown. And there's, like, we love you, we love you. And I'm just like, could not stop crying. I was like, this is, and I'm pretty sure I cried to the end of the movie. Yeah, it was really, but I love moments like that where you're just like so moved by a display of like love in a film, even if it feels imperfect. But in that moment, it is very pure. Like it is really like profound. I fucking love that movie.
I completely agree with you. And I haven't said this for a long time, so I'm going to say it again. Shoplifters contains, I think, the greatest hug in film history.
Oh, what happened?
The woman on the, they're sat around the fire and she's got the little girl. It's like the little girl's like sat in front of her and she looks at her arms and sees that they're covered in like scars and cigarette burns.
Mm-mm.
And she says to her, I want you to know that if you ever think that this is, that was what love was, that isn't what love was.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
how love feels. And she hugs her. Oh,
yeah. I remember that.
Oh, dear.
It is really that the end of the movie where she goes when they're being interrogated.
Yes.
And the guy refers to her as the girl's mother. And she goes, oh, did she call me that? Like, did she? And she's like, so like struck by that. And I was just like, I can't handle this. Like, it's so.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love a good movie. Do you like a good movie cry?
Yes, but only on my own.
Oh, my.
I deliberately go and see stuff. I know it's going to make me cry on my own.
That's so funny.
I'm riddled with toxic masculinity and don't want
anyone to see me cry. Are you unlearning? Are you listening and learning?
I'm listening and learning and shit, but you know, still don't want people to see me cry.
By your fucking self.
Yeah.
I had a really funny experience crying in a movie with my friend where I was seeing Jojo Rabbit and I start crying when a very important character died, which was like maybe 20, 25 minutes before the movie ended. And I did not stop crying until the movie ended. And my friend just like silently retrieves a crumpled tissue and just like passes it silently over to me. Cause like, I like couldn't, I just was just like, oh my God, like these babies and the war and he's alone and and there's still jokes going on. Like, oh, it's not a good time to be a Nazi. You know, all those really like ridiculous things that should not work. But, that movie fucked me up too. But that was like an aroma. It just,
Roma is something else.
Yeah.
What's the film that most people don't like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally.
I just remembered one that actually has a funny story attached. So it's a very short story. Okay, this isn't my official answer though, but I went to go see Babel when I was, like, the year it came out. So I was like 15 or 16. That movie, I also cried a lot watching that movie. Rinko Kikuchi, I thought she was robbed at the Oscars that year. But I was like crying, like, oh my God. Like leaving the theater, like just wiping away the tears, like with my friends. I'm like, wow. And then I leave and I make eye contact with this guy and he goes, I want my money back. As if I'd be like in with him. And I was like, I was so like affronted. Like, and I think I made this face and he just kind of like turned away. I was like, how dare you? Like, and then I didn't realize until like a couple years later that people kind of shit on Babel a little bit. And I was like, the movie is amazing. Like, I think that movie is fucking amazing.
Oh, what's your man. Official answer?
Oh, What Lies Beneath. Have you seen that
I
movie?
I love What Lies Beneath.
So I made, okay, this is actually funny. This is another movie that I had my DP watch as it relates to Candyman. Like, and the movie is like, this is the movie that Robert Zemeckis made. I talk about this all the time. I talked about this on another podcast. I fucking love this movie. But it's a movie that Zemeckis made in between the island bits of Castaway and the other shit, Russia and America shit of Castaway. And it's just, it's so good. It's really tight and it's really interesting and it's weird and it has like great like suspense. It's sort of Hitchcockian in a way. And it does a lot of like holding on shots and like things living in a master or like a two. And it's really good. Like Michelle Pfeiffer, queen of my life.
The greatest.
Oh God. She's stunning, stunning, stunning woman. But Harrison Ford, also adequate. It's just, it's so good.
Yeah. You can have that. What's the film that you used to love? You loved it, but then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, I do not like this anymore. For whatever reason that might be. Nia DaCosta.
So Enough, I think, was contemporaneously like a modern day Sleeping with the Enemy.
Yeah.
And I watched Sleeping with the Enemy when I was younger and I was like, whoa, wow. Like, that is crazy. Life is insane that could happen to a person. And there's so many things that happen in that movie that when I watched it when I was older, I was like, this is fucking inappropriate. Like, first of all, the abuse in that relationship is really poorly done. Secondly, when she goes to the small town and falls in love with a drama teacher, there's a scene where they're kissing, he's on top of her, they're on the stairs, and then she's like, okay, stop, because she's like triggered and uncomfortable, and he like doesn't stop, and she's like, stop, seriously, and he's like, nah, and he keeps kissing her, and then she hits him after like saying stop for a third time, and he pulls away, looks at her, and says, what did he do to you? And I'm like, sir, it's what you're doing in the moment right now. Like, that's the problem. Wow. Like, and I was just thinking about that because I was revisiting the film and I just thought to myself, that's very bad. So that's definitely a movie I revisited. And I was like, no, thank you very much.
What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, because the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you.
This is very hard. Yeah. Very, 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 very hard. I think it's Apocalypse Now.
Great, great film.
Because it's the movie that made me realize, or probably the most prominent of a number of movies that made me realize I wanted to be a director, as opposed to some other shit in film. And I also watched that movie. I was in AP English at the time, and we were reading Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. And my teacher was like, oh yeah, that's there's this movie called Apocalypse Now that's sort of a loose adaptation of it. I was like, okay, cool. And also happened to be in my dorm, and like at the time you just watched whatever was in the dorm over and over again because we had like six tapes or six DVDs,
right?
And so I watched the movie, and obviously I'd seen movies like Jurassic Park where it's like lots of special effects and all this stuff and big movies with big ideas, but I felt like I'd never seen a movie that was as audacious as that. Like, and the audacity in part was going to a Southeast Asian country and bombing the shit out of it as if it is Vietnam, which in retrospect, not great. But I thought the film was beautiful. I thought it was ambitious. And then, of course, when you watch Hearts of Darkness, the documentary about the making of it, you're like, oh, that's crazy. Like, you know, like people like literally put their blood, sweat, and tears and cocaine into making that film. And I felt like, I just felt like, in movies, you can do anything. Like, that's really how that movie made me feel. And so it's a movie that I watched before I start directing anything. So I've watched it four times. I revisit that movie a lot. I think it's fucking awesome. I watched it in IMAX recently.
Oh, wow.
And, like, it was, like, his his latest cut of the film.
I'm has the latest cut.
Leave the cutting room and make me another movie, please.
Agreed. Leave it alone. It's very good.
It's so good. But this cut was really good, actually. It was really good. Okay. Yeah. But yeah.
Great, great, great answer. What's the film you most relate to, Nia DaCosta?
So, same time period. I was feeling very, like, high school, wanting to, like, be an adult and thinking very naively that, like, adults just were more sensible people than teenagers. Not the case. or, like, just thinking, like, I don't know, like, things are going to be so much better after this. And so Dazed and Confused was a movie that, like, really, like, I really felt that. I felt that, like, excitement about, like, the last day of school and, like, the hope and the excitement and, like, not just for summer, but for, like, the rest of your life. And there's this one shot in that movie that I fucking love where the main guy, he's, like, they're, like, in a field. It's, like, near the end of the film. And one of his friends is, like he's just talking about what he would say about this place that they're from. And while he's, like, going in on the town that he really doesn't like, it's just, like, Linklater just, like, slows everything down for the shot of the main guy. And, like, he just has this wistful, hopeful look on his face. And it's, like, completely outside of, like, the grammar of the rest of the scene. And it's just this really special moment. And I was like, oh, that completely captures for me, like, how I feel right now. I related to that a lot in that moment. And also, I just fucking love that movie.
That is a really, really smart answer. I love that. What's Richard Linklater's best film?
School of Rock.
Correct.
Correct. Listen, Boyhood is amazing. It is a feat of filmmaking, but School of Rock is...
Yeah.
I mean...
The Before Sunrise trilogy. Lovely stuff. But it's no School of Rock.
But who cares? Just people talking. Not enough music. Not enough Jack Black. Okay.
Not enough kicking some ass. Mm-hmm. Now, here we go. We have to do it. You know we have to do it. So let's just do it and then it's done, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Nia DaCosta?
Oh my God. This is also high school. So... A lot of things were happening to me and my brain and my body in high school. Y Tu Mamá También is... Do you get that? You must get that a lot, though.
I mean, it's come up before, but it's hard to beat.
I mean, I just feel like a lot of things were happening inside of me when every time I watched that movie. And that movie was another film that we had in the dorm. So...
Oh, really?
It was literally like, you know how like men go to strip clubs together, which I find strange. It was like the female, like teenage girl version of that, where we sit in the dorm and like, play it again. It's like, you just watch it. But it is also like an amazing film. But I mean, Gael García Bernal, Diego Luna, so fucking hot. Absolutely ridiculous. Oh, what's the actress' name? I feel terrible. She's also in Pan's Labyrinth, which is another film.
Pan's Labyrinth is one of my faves.
Maribel Verdú.
Yes, please.
Yeah, Maribel Verdú, Gael García Bernal, Diego Luna, together, amazing. Mm-hmm. I think it's the first time I saw, like, a threesome. The first time I saw that much sex in a movie. The first time I saw two guys going at it in a movie. Like, I was just like, everything is happening and everything is great. And at the same time, you're watching, like, this country sort of go through this huge upheaval and this... These guys are going through an emotional appeal. That's not the point. The point is, at the end of the film, when they finally fuck, you're just like, yes. Like, your guy just scored a touchdown. Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's such a good film as well. And it's really moving. Yeah. And I love the ending. I think it's really subtle and really deep. And I love all the voiceover and the way it does everyone's lives very quickly.
It's a fucking
great film.
Yeah.
Great choice. Now,
thank you very much.
We've arrived at some people's favorite part. Troubling boners, worrying wide-ons.
Mm.
What's the film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should?
It's hard because I don't think anything... I don't kink shame, you know, but...
nothing's worrying about a wide-on is what you're saying. And that's...
But exactly. Never be worried about your wide-on. But there's... wait, Brett, can I not do two or no?
Yeah, for this, listen, the more the merrier for this one.
Okay.
I like it when someone embraces this question.
Oh, I loved it. It was so fun to think about this because I was like, what has worried me sexually? Again, not worried about this one, actually, but I think it's a great scene and super sexy. So that movie, The Handmaiden, which is a very sexy, dark, crazy film by Park Chan-wook, who I'm obsessed with, but worried about him because I'm like, you watch his movies and you're like, are you good? But
everything okay at home?
Yeah, exactly. The scene in that movie where I think it's before they've slept together. The tooth bit. Yeah, when she's shaving her tooth.
Yeah, that is a sexy. That is really sexy.
Like, Jesus Christ! Like, yeah. It's such a sexy scene, and I thought it was so well done. I was like, this is amazing. But I was like, I'm getting turned on by two women. like a woman shaving another woman's teeth. I'm like, this is crazy. And as a straight woman, I was like, listen, sexuality is very complicated and, you know, profound. Anyway.
Yeah, I didn't know that my thing was watching someone shave someone's teeth off in a bath.
Yeah. But I can't wait for that to happen to me. So I can't go to the dentist, is what I'm saying. No, but I think my real answer, because I actually was like, I shouldn't find that sexy. So in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
Robert Redford's character comes home early on and you don't know it's his home yet, but he comes into a room. He's in a room in the dark, sitting with his gun. Woman walks in and he's pointing the gun at her. And like, I think she had started to undress and he was like, tells her to keep undressing. And she very slowly, like under the pressure of this gun, like undresses for him basically. And I was like, I'm really aroused by this, but what are these dynamics at play? And I was like, I really should not find this man forcing this woman to get undressed. But there's so much like frisson or frisson, how do you pronounce that word? Frisson, je sais pas. But, and then, you know, and then he comes up to her and like grabs her and then she's like, oh my God, when are you going to be on time next time or something like that? And you're like, oh, they're like dating. They know each other. That's good. So that was a worrying light on.
That's a fantastic answer that's never come up.
Oh, really?
I mean, in fairness to the scene.
Yeah.
Let's hope and assume that what you're picking up on, although he is pointing a gun at her and telling her to get undressed, they do know each other and the vibe you're picking up is they're playing a game.
Exactly. But here's actually something I thought about. When I was watching this movie, I was like that scene in particular before the reveal of the end, I was like, I feel like Robert Redford wouldn't shoot a scene where he is forcing a woman he does not know to get undressed. Because I was like, morally, I don't think that's his vibe. And so I was like, does she have papers on her that he needs? And then she was, and anyway, yeah, it was really, I went through, so that's why I'm like, I knew it was fun. It was fun.
Really good.
I absolved myself of guilt.
Really, really good. Thank you. What's objectively the greatest film of all time, Nia DaCosta?
I hate this question, but I love this question at the same time. So I kind of want to say Gosford Park, which...
I mean, this is like episode 162.
Yeah.
No one has mentioned Gosford Park.
Yeah.
In any of these. I mean, sure, it comes up a lot in Worrying Wide Ones, but in objectively the greatest.
Because of Clive Owen?
Maggie Smith. Go on. Objectively the greatest. Tell me why Gosford Park is the greatest film of all time.
And maybe it's because it's like the greatest fucking script. And Robert Altman and people talking over each other and the moving camera and just like, it just feels like cinema. It just feels like a murder mystery. It feels like this is a shot, which like, I feel like you could never do today where he's just like, people are talking, you know, someone's going to be murdered. And then they like kind of pan across, they pan some people out of the room and they land on like a bunch of vials and they push in and one of them says poison. And I'm just like, yes, yes, Altman, push in on that poison bottle. Like, and the way the conversations flow with each other and like the dynamics and everything's super clear. And it's not like, I feel like sometimes Poirot or like Agatha Christie sort of, I guess the Poirot sort of mysteries, which I love. And like Lumet, I think, does an amazing job with them. But sometimes it's just like, and now two people are talking in a room about the things that they know. But this movie is really like, the stakes are there throughout. Like, oh God, it's just so good. And it's like, it's dark and it's funny and it's sexy and it's like, I just think it's so fucking good. Like, it just feels like a capital M movie.
I mean, what an extraordinary answer.
I just feel like I have to be honest.
I love that. Thank you. What's the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
You know, I want to say The Princess Bride, but that's just something I make people watch on pain of death. It actually probably is Bridget Jones's Diary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I realized recently that I could like quote that entire film. It's truly ridiculous. I just love it so much. It's pretty much to me a perfect movie. It's vibrating at its own frequency.
Bridget Jones's Diary. Here's the question for you. What are your thoughts on Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason, episode 2?
I've only seen it maybe once, maybe one and a half times. I did not enjoy my experience as much as the first one. So I don't really think about that movie. Yeah. Do you like that movie?
I love it. I think it's really funny.
Do I have to revisit it?
I think it was just really sort of underrated. I think there's some really funny shit in it, and there's some cool stuff where she takes mushroom and ends up in prison, and there's a lot of like big swings in it. Yeah. I loved it.
Okay, wait. Baby, The Last Dinosaur, Bridget Jones.
Enough. What a list. What a take-home list. Baby, The Last Dinosaur, Bridget Jones' Diary, and Enough.
This is a great festival lineup, I think.
Christ. I don't know what you call that festival. Forgotten Gems?
Forgotten Gems. Oh my God. Gems is the word, yes.
What's the film? I mean, we don't like to be negative, but we'll do it quickly. Mm. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Okay, so this is funny because I was really trying to think about, like, what does that mean for me? One of them is a movie that you love. So I thought that's pretty funny. Also by a filmmaker that I love. And I thought that's probably more fair to talk about a movie by a filmmaker that I think is a genius, a movie of theirs that I hate. Not in a shady way, because I think all filmmakers make bad movies. Maybe I already did.
No.
Oh, dear. But and then there's one movie that I literally had to walk out of. And then there's a movie that I wanted to walk out of, but I didn't because I had an Odeon pass and it was basically free anyway. Which one of those would you like to hear? It's a multiple choice.
I'm scared of the one you know I like.
Mm-hmm.
The one you walked out on.
So it was 15 minutes, maybe five. So maybe, I don't know if this is fair to call it this. Mm-hmm. Into the Tim Burton sequel to Alice in Wonderland.
That's totally fair.
I have never walked out of a movie before in my life. It was like a free, like maybe like a PGA screening. I went with a friend. I was tired, but also I was being assaulted on every level. And I just felt like, I said to my friend, I'm so sorry. I have to go. I'm like, I just, and I fled the theater. It was really hard. I like couldn't, oh man. It was a dark time. It was a dark time.
What was the other one? The one you wanted to walk out of, but you didn't?
So this I feel bad about because I don't think, like, it's not my filmmakers that I love. I don't even know who made the movie. It's a movie called One for the Money, and it's a Katherine Heigl film based on a Janet Ivanovich novel. It was supposed to be the beginning of, like, a series of movies, which would have been great for Katherine Heigl. I think she's great. She's a great actress.
She's great.
My friend and I, we went to see it together, could not believe what we were watching. Like, we were literally in awe. We're like, how? Is this pop? And now because of streaming, I think there's so many movies like that are just like spat out onto like Hulu or Netflix, or whatever. But like in a theater,
is it? Is like, she a bounty hunter or something?
She is, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a line we could not stop saying, which is like, our history is ancient, like the pyramids, baby. We're just like, what? What? Oh man. I was like,
what's the film you thought I loved?
Oh, I know you love it because you talked about it on the podcast.
Which?
There's an exclamation point in the title.
Oh, Airplane.
Oh, no, I love Airplane.
Oh.
Airplane's amazing.
What's the film with the exclamation mark?
Mother.
Oh, you can have that. You can have that. I appreciate that Mother is very divisive.
It's to the point where, like, I remember watching that movie and I was like, I didn't even hate it. I was just like, I never want to talk about this movie ever in my life. I refuse to be part of this deception. I was like, and I fucking love Darren Aronofsky. I love him.
Noah? You see Noah?
I haven't seen Noah yet. Is it good?
Put it on your list. Put it on your weird list.
I don't like that you're asking me to watch these movies that I'm certain all are terrible.
Noah's great. Noah's like mad.
Yeah. I saw the beginning of Noah, the opening sequence of Noah, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
Like it's like animated, like kind of birth of man sort of evolution shit.
Yeah, well, that.
I think that's really cool.
It's got a rock monster in it.
Yeah, all that.
It's pretty good.
Okay, cool. I'll check it out. I'm trusting you, Brett.
This is such a mad list you've got there. What is you're funny. You've got humor in your films and shit. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I think it's This is Spinal Tap.
Yes.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I just remember I thought every fucking thing was hilarious about that movie. Like the cucumber in the pants going through fucking, you know, like None More Black, Up to 11, like all those things. I was like, cause usually like iconic lines get picked out of a movie and then you watch it. You're like, okay, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. That was of its time. But like every fucking thing is funny. And like, that's a Christopher Guest movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's a Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner. That was part of Rob Reiner's epic 7-film run of like
Rob Reiner, the greatest filmmaker of all time.
It's insane.
If we analyze it, yeah.
He made
more masterpieces than anyone.
No, not more than Spielberg.
Okay.
And I'd say in less time. Like,
yeah.
Spielberg doesn't have that record, but he also did release Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in the same year, which is insane.
Yeah, which is really mad.
So I don't know. But
okay, you can have him. Spielberg, then Reiner. Scorsese.
Right. Ooh. Yeah, he's my guy. He's actually the big part of my filmic sort of awakening.
Same.
Yeah.
Love him.
He's the best. Have you watched The Departed lately?
Yeah.
That's one I thought would age badly, and I was like, nope, still amazing.
I think it's got better the more I watched that.
Still love her.
The Aviator, most underrated Scorsese film. I love it.
I watched it recently, and I was like, this is actually very, very good.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't know why people don't talk about it all. I don't know why people all day aren't just talking about The Aviator.
I think about this with What Lies Beneath. Like, if What Lies Beneath came out today, people would be so excited about it.
Yeah.
And I just think it's the environment in which these movies come out. Like, what are we fatigued with? What's like the Oscar bait of the year? Because when you like extricate films from their context in that way, like not even the context of like society, but the context of like the film industry, the perception of it always, I think, shifts in a pleasant way.
Yeah. And maybe
unless it's Green Book, which is obviously terrible.
Yeah. The Aviator is really entertaining. And I wonder if part of its issue was it looks and sounds like it's an Oscar bait film. And I think it's a really fun time as well.
That's true. That's very true. But I think it does because it's like you have Leo, like whenever you have a movie where people are playing, a lot of people are playing people we're familiar with, like Kate Blanchett playing Kate Hepburn or Katharine Hepburn. I should say, I don't know her like that, Kate. Katharine Hepburn. Gwen Stefani's in it playing, I don't know, one of our classic blonde bombshell actresses. And then of course, Leo wanting that Oscar. I think he's a great actor, but sometimes I'm like, honey, you can relax now. It's like when he went up for The Revenant, I was like, thank God, because he was going to kill himself. Like, in doing, not like because he didn't get one, but like in the midst of doing a job.
And I was like, we can't let him.
Yeah, I was like, he was going to hurt himself very tragically if we did not give him an Oscar.
I'm glad we saved him. He's very, very good. He's so good.
I think he's weirdly underrated.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, he's very famous and he's like one of our last like movie stars, but I think he's a lot more dexterous and interesting of an actor than people give him credit for.
Agreed. Nia DaCosta.
Yes.
You've been wonderful. I've given you a quite appalling list of films to watch. You've got The Last Dinosaur. You've got Enough. You've got, what was the other ones?
Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason.
Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason. And
Noah.
And Noah. I mean, what a night you have ahead of you.
I'm so excited.
Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
However, when you were 96, and you were with your family and you said, who here hasn't watched The Princess Bride yet? And a lot of your family went, Grandma, you make us watch it once a week. But one of your great nieces had just got a new girlfriend. And the girlfriend said, what's a movie? And you went, wait a second. You've not even seen a movie. Get in here. And you said, can we watch it in my bedroom? Because I am quite old and I'd like to lie down while we watch it. And so you make your extended family, there's about 35 of them, you make them stand up around your bed. There's no seats in your bedroom. You lie on your bed, sprawled out. You put a projector on. You show Princess Bride. The great niece's girlfriend is like, what is on the screen? These people look so different. And you're like, yeah, it's the olden days. People look like that. And they watch Princess Bride. And in the middle of it, your brain goes, I mean, I've seen this film enough. Which reminds me of that J-Lo film that we still love. And then your brain smiled and then it died. Your family, they don't notice that you're dead because they're so enthralled by The Princess Bride because it still holds up in 100 years' time. Your great-niece's girlfriend goes, oh, new great-auntie. I love that film. Great-auntie? No response. They shake you. Oh, she's dead. I'm walking past. I got a coffin with me. You know what I'm like. I hear screaming from the bedroom. Great auntie, wake up. Wake up. I run upstairs. I go, oh, it's not Nia DaCosta dead, is it? And they all go, yeah. And I go, get out of here. I'll take care of it. But because you've lain on the bed, right? you've got one of those memory foam mattresses, but memory foam in the future, not only does it remember your body position, but it becomes part of your body.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it's you are now half woman, half bed.
Mm.
And it's very hard to separate the two. It won't let go of that memory. So I have to chop up the bed and you into pieces.
Wow.
So there's so much more of you than I was expecting. I stuff you all into the coffin. It's fucking absolutely packed in there. There's no room in this coffin. There's only enough room to slide one DVD into the side with you for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone when it's your turn? Please, now, Nia DaCosta.
I'm going to bring Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day.
Of course you are. And as expected.
It's a great film. And it feels like a little slice of heaven itself. So
that's a lovely review.
Thank you.
And no one's brought it, so they're going to be delighted to see you up there. Nia, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, other than Candyman? I don't know when this episode is going to come out, but either Candyman is just about to come out or it has just come out. And I say, go see it. What do you say?
I say go see it as well. Yeah, that's about it in the for now. But yeah, Candyman. I'm really excited about it. And then next year, in a year, if you guys can remember, I have another movie coming out called The Marvel. So
the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's movie.
Yes.
Which we're really excited about.
Yeah.
Nia, God bless you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. So that was episode 162. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Nia. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't tell me about the podcast. I don't care. What I want to know is, what is the film that means the most to you and why? It's a very nice thing to read. It does help numbers, apparently, and all that, and I do appreciate it. Thank you to whoever listens to this podcast. Thank you so much to Nia for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lytham for the photography. Come and join me next week for an amazing and hilarious guest. You will love it. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.